Okay, good morning, everybody. Thanks for joining us on day two of our UBS Tech Conference. I'm pleased to welcome Applied Materials this morning to our keynote speech. We have Bob Halliday, Applied's Executive Vice President and CFO, joining us. Thank you, Bob, for joining us today.
Thanks, Steven. Thanks for inviting us.
Yeah, no, I thought it would be great. Our tech team thought, there's a lot of innovation happening in the semiconductor space. It'd be great to get Applied Materials up here to talk to our audience about some of the opportunities in the industry over the next couple of years with new technologies developing. You're the largest company out there for now. We'll see if you can continue that. But for the format of this morning's keynote, Bob, I thought we would give you an opportunity to share some of your thoughts of how the industry's developing, how Applied has done so far in addressing the opportunity in semicap equipment, display, and services, and maybe some of the financial targets you're hitting today and are going to try to achieve going forward. And then we'll open up to your questions.
See if I can give you a little background. So Steven said to me right before we kicked off, well, Bob, you had your earnings call last Thursday, so you can say some of the message you have then. Of course, in our industry, if you're stale 4 days later, it's still pretty fresh. Let me tell you a couple of things we said on the call. It might interest you to get the topic going today. Overall, we see 2016 as a pretty good demand year for our customers. We do think it's sort of more second half loaded than the first half. We see foundry stronger in the second half than the first half. We see NAND spending strong next year, particularly at V-NAND, vertical NAND, spending on vertical NAND, capital spending, probably 80% of their spending next year is on vertical NAND. Foundry, I think, is more weighted towards 10 area, where it might be 60% of the spending in foundry. And then DRAM, so we see NAND spending in total up next year, probably around 20% maybe. Foundry, we see, is pretty good, maybe up a little bit. DRAM, a lot of debate on DRAM in the industry and the sell side buy side. Some people say it's down 30-40%. We're kind of down 15% probably. The reason we don't think it's down quite as much is because utilization is running pretty well. The actual chip size is getting better. It was kind of interesting as they go node to node in DRAM, their effective capacity in the same space is kind of shrinking about 15% because more layers, bigger die size. So that's DRAM outlook. And then logic, we think, is up next year. The big U.S. logic company is up a good amount, as they've talked about. But some of the smaller Japanese logic-type companies are probably less in dollar value of WFE because a lot of the equipment they buy is from Japanese vendors. And with the yen down, the nominal dollar value is down. So I think the industry outlook is that. In terms of Applied Materials, Applied Materials is kind of a complicated company to understand because we're different industries, different markets, different products. So if we talk about semi, so if you look at last year, I'll get to semi equipment last. But last year we grew our display business again for the fourth year in a row, almost $800 million in revenues. And just several years ago it was about $450 million, and we gained share there and grow the addressable market. Our service business, which a couple of years ago was about $2 billion, kind of flat. It was about $2,550,000 last year, roughly. So up 2 years in a row, pretty substantially up over 15%. And then if you go look at our semi business, in a year where people thought that the semi market at the beginning of the year would be about $33.5 billion WFE, probably ended up in the, probably around 32 or a little under maybe. And in that environment, we gained share virtually every vertical we competed. So if you look at it segmentation-wise, in DRAM, the last 2 years, we're up about 5 points of share. NAND, we're up a little over 3 points in 2 years, but in the transition from 2D to 3D, remember, most of your next year's spending is 3D, we're up about 5 points. And then if you go look at logic, we're up a little bit of share there. And then in foundry, we've held high share. So you say, well, why didn't your revenues grow more in 2015 to get all the good things going on? Because last year was a big shift in who bought equipment. Remember, the year was $33.5 billion. The year ended probably 32-ish. The biggest decline was probably in foundry and came later in the year. Our biggest market share is in foundry. So if you look at foundry, it went from the previous 3 years, 2012 to 2014, went from an average of about 43.7% of WFE this year we think it's about 34.5. So we're down about 9-10 points. DRAM went up about 9 points in this year. But most people prognosticate that foundry's going to get stronger. DRAM won't stay at those levels. As we said earlier, some people say it's down 34%. So if we gain in these verticals, gain by product, gain WFE share, and the mix is a little more normalized for us in the next couple of years, our revenue outlook is pretty good, and it's probably incrementally even more positive for us in the gross margin line. Because the mix of the products we sell in the foundry is more beneficial to us. Is even more powerful for us in foundry in terms of gross margins than memory. So that was my opening 8-minute remarks. I was trying to make it an easy day for you.
No, I hope people heard us. So no, thanks for that update. You know, I'll ask you a couple of follow-up questions, and for the folks in the audience, if you have questions, I think there are instructions on how you could ask as well. You could either text us or use the system, and we can activate your microphone too. But maybe we could start off with how you began the talk with just wafer fab equipment spending.
Sure.
Maybe from a real high level, I think if you look at Applied sales for the past couple of years, you've clearly grown faster.
Yeah.
Than the industry, wafer fab equipment spending. Maybe just share some thoughts of how you've been able to grow faster.
Sure.
Has it been just market share gains, better products, customer mix, all of the above?
Sure. So if you characterize the semiconductor industry, the capital equipment industry, it is really the epitome of a product-driven industry. Because, you know, we have 5 to 10 big customers, right? And those big customers are experts on the equipment they want to buy. They bring it into the fab, run the equipment for a year before they even buy it, if it's new equipment. So best product wins. So when we, Gary and myself came to Applied about, you know, 2.5-3 years ago, we said best product wins. Where are we not as well positioned as we'd like with products, particularly in markets that we think are going to grow pretty well? So we could see that within semi, as you go to vertical structures, you go to 3D NAND, things like that, deposition and etch were going to grow. Right? And you can see in the data it's going. If you look at Applied, many years ago was a leader in etch market share, but frankly didn't have the right product. So we invested in product development, etch, CVD, ALD, atomic layer deposition, which was growing rapidly. We didn't have a product, and we developed products in those areas. So if you go look at the examples, in etch, we were a little over 10% market share of total etch in 2012 or 13, and we were up over 18% this year. We've gained every year since then, and we're going to gain again next year. We introduced a new product called the SIM3 product. Has been the most rapid ramp in a product we've had in our history, I think. If you look at atomic layer deposition, we didn't have a product, so we developed a new product, and now we have the Olympia product, where we have many DTUR and PTUR wins, so that should generate extra revenue for us this year. CVD, we lost share for a couple of years. Last 2 years, we gained share in CVD. And then there's some new technology, selective removal, which is like etch. We're introducing a new product. So if you go back to our projections at Analyst Day, we said we'd get up 350 chambers or something by the end of January, I think, in etch. And that's within like 1 year. And then if you go to selective removal product, we projected our model, it'll be several hundred million dollars, including starting this year, ALD, the same type of ramp. So if you go look at it, where are we gaining share? So if you look at Applied Semi businesses, roughly 60% of our revenues, we don't compete with the big U.S. companies. We have very high share, strong positions, might have some competition from smaller Japanese or Korean vendors. 40% of our revenues is where we compete against the two big U.S. companies. And if you look at those, we're gaining share there. Etch, CVD, ALD, we have a new product, select removal. We've kind of held share in inspection, but we have some really good products coming out in 16, which should help us. So if you look at it, we're gaining share by product,
and we're gaining share within those vertical markets I talked about, and we project that to continue. So you'd say, well, I don't see enough of it in your revenue line. It's kind of the mix thing, right? Where you have the highest shares of foundry, but they didn't spend as much this year. But within products, within verticals, we're getting share.
Okay. Thanks for that update on how you got it and how it's looking going forward. Maybe we could follow up on the view that you just shared a few moments ago about NAND flash customers in the spend that they could engage in next year. You talked about on the earnings call last week that perhaps the NAND industry can ramp capacity up to 350,000 wafers per month, maybe 400,000 wafers per month. Does that view, you know, still look healthy as you look past the next couple of years? Because you've got these potential additional NAND flash fabs. You know, Intel's talked about a 3D NAND flash fab. China has talked about possibly building a NAND flash fab. So NAND flash spending looks healthy in 2016. You think it could be healthy going forward? Does your view include some sort of China fab or Intel fab in the 2016 view? Or is that kind of growth going past 2016?
So Intel and China. Okay, so let me see, give you a broader answer on this, like including your specific question. So a question I got asked a lot a year ago was, why are customers going to vertical NAND devices where they're spending the money? Kind of what's your opportunity and how fast will it happen? And now you're asking the sustainability question too. So just briefly, in the world there's about 1.3 million, might be a little more now, 1.4 million wafer starts per month of NAND capacity. And that's spread among four big suppliers, Samsung, Hynix, Micron, Toshiba. Okay? So for years, it made the next generation NAND by just shrinking in two dimensions, planar NAND. And when they went from one node to another, they might get 40 to 70% bit growth by just making it smaller to get more memory capacity out of the same wafer size, same facilities. So for years, they didn't spend too much on capital because they were just shrinking, getting more memory out of the same wafer. And all they pretty much spend money on was things like lithography equipment. Because if you're doing surface area and the surface area doesn't increase, you don't need to buy those type of tools, but you need the lithography tools. But now they've reached an inflection where just shrinking in two dimensions doesn't do it for them because the devices have technical, commercial, and economic issues. One is you're down to 8 electrons on a cell. It's not that reliable. So if you go into a third dimension, you release that, and you got higher endurance, better NAND devices. And going vertical in three dimensions with multiple layers eventually becomes technically easy to make, and the cost gets better for you longer term. But once you switch from 2D to 3D, it's a different tool set. Lithography is not as important because instead of 10 nanometer lithography, you're kind of at 50 nanometer lithography. So the dimensions aren't as tough because you're going in many layers vertically, but each line on the layer is bigger, right? So it's all about deposition and etch. So for companies like ourselves, Lam, Tel, it's a good thing because you need more deposition and etch tools. So customers have been pushing to make this transition more and more aggressively every year because their customers who buy NAND devices for them say, hey, we've tested, it's a better device. We want that device. So they're aggressively going now. So 2 years ago, they put online about 65,000 capacity of NAND. This year, we'll end about 150. We think next year, we'll end cumulative capacity of about 350 to 400. So Stephen's question is, will it sustain itself post next year? I think so, because they're going to have to bring on they got about 1.3, 1.4 million wafer starts. And there's going to be technical, economic, and commercial reasons to do it. So I think it'll sustain. Will it sustain at 16 levels in 17? Not quite sure, because now you see other people like the large logic manufacturer interested in it too. Now this goes to a very interesting question. If you think of the way people use computer chips, and if you think about your everyday use or your kids' use, a lot of it's content, right? Whether it's video or pictures, data, big data. Is memory becoming more interesting in the future versus the trade-off on processing power? If you go look at packaging, stacked DRAM, all this stuff, it's pretty interesting stuff. In terms of your short question, I think NAND will be pretty healthy for a while. I think next year's a big year. I don't know if 2017 quite as big, but I think it'll be healthy for a little while.
Okay. No, thanks for sharing that on NAND. Just specifically about China, it sounds like perhaps it's not really in your view of 2016 NAND WFE spend. There seems to be a lot of activity in China. Historically, Applied's had good relationships in China, whether it be SMIC or HHNEC. There's the possibility that you'll have these Chinese national companies perhaps look into investing in NAND flash fabs or some sort of semiconductor factory. How is the opportunity addressing those types of customers? There's not really a Chinese national equipment company. Do these relationships really help that Applied has in China in addressing these opportunities, or is it just everybody's on the same starting point?
Yeah, let me see if I can connect from the previous question. I do believe that some of the memory stuff that's in the public domain about China in 2016 will happen in China, especially big logic company to do something with their facility, as they've said, right? I think the spending is a little bit more weighted to the second half, but I think it'll happen. In terms of China in general, I think they've said it many times, there's many indicators. I think China's very serious about getting into the semiconductor industry. A lot of the focus so far seems to be more on fabless and chips versus equipment. That's kind of typical. If you look at the history in whether it's Japan or Korea or even Taiwan, when nations set it as a priority to get into the semiconductor industry, they tend to focus on the chip size first or mostly instead of equipment for a few reasons. One, what they import a lot of is chips, right? It's actually, in certain unusual respects, a little easier to scale a chip company than an equipment company because the supply chain's different. If you want to scale a chip company, you have very large suppliers who can help provide equipment and support and service. You have much smaller suppliers into the semiconductor equipment company, and it's a more complex supply chain. Typically, it's devices before equipment that a country gets into. Historically, the devices they get into first tends to be memory devices. They're a little simpler devices to design and manufacture. For instance, the DRAM's got some built-in capacity to fail individual cells even, right? Typically, it's devices before they get into equipment, and memory usually is the type of device that's selected. In terms of for equipment companies like Applied Materials, I think it's an opportunity. I think you typically sell more equipment and probably spurs overall demand. My guess that'll happen, my guess, it's probably a post-2016 spending ramp other than the issue we entered earlier, and it could help for a couple of years.
Okay. Thanks for sharing that on NAND flash. Just one last question on WFE.
Sure.
I just have one or two company questions. We could have to open up to some of the questions you have chatted me.
Sure.
On the foundry opportunity, you talked about earlier, wafer fab equipment spending from foundries was a little bit lighter than expected this year. It seems like if you look at your 2016 wafer fab equipment view, sounds like if spending is a little bit stronger than expected, it probably comes from foundry, perhaps from foundry 10 nanometer. What's different in 2016 about foundry and 10 nanometer spend? Is it just a little bit less, maybe it's not the right word to say reuse of equipment, but perhaps it's some pent-up demand for equipment?
Right.
If you could just share some color on foundry.
Yeah, that's a really good question. Because if you rewind a year ago, probably everybody, the sell side, the buy side, everybody, myself, we probably overestimated demand a little bit in foundry, right? I think there's two elements that are worth noting here. One is, what was the status of underutilized equipment, I'll call it, as compared to reuse? Two, the nature of reuse from node to node is really a two-nodal issue. You sort of have to look at 2016 versus 10/7, okay? Let me go to the first one first. There was probably a little bit extra capacity we didn't see out there last year for several reasons. The big Samsung, or the big Korean logic manufacturer, had a lot of the Apple business at 28, and at 20 they didn't. Many people come around last May or June, maybe it was June, when Samsung came out and said, "Hey, we have X," I don't know, it was 53,000 or 41,000 or 53,000 wafer starts of 14 nano capacity available. Everybody said, "How could you? Where'd you get the equipment?" Well, it's kind of probably reuse of 28 stuff is my guess, right? Then if you go to big Taiwanese foundry, they seem to ramp very efficiently in terms of equipment reuse. But they had ramped very effectively at 20 for their big customer because they weren't mistakes. They were able to use some of that equipment at 16 because of higher, my suspicion, we don't know the data, more yields, maturing of the process, got rid of risk. Then even the foundry in New York State, they had some capacity that ramped up, right? Ramping on the first generation FinFET, particularly 16, they were probably a little risk-averse and conservative, and then they were able to get yields up, utilization up, node-to-node transitions up. I think there's probably a little bit more latent capacity than no one knew, because we don't know yield data, right? Or even utilization data at that level of detail. The second issue is this two-nodal thing. For years, if you look at the industry, when you go to a node, it's a technology switch and kind of a product switch. Now in my mind, you go from technology transitions that are almost two-nodal and products that are individual nodes. For 2016 and 10/7, at 20 and at 10, they might make the change on the interconnects, which is all the interconnect to the transistor, and at 16 and 7, they change the transistor. If you go look at it, for the end user, the customer's customer, the transistor change is particularly interesting because that's where you get really good device performance in your phone. 16 was the first FinFET. That was really powerful for the customer's customer, the end user. Changing the interconnect is good for power, density of the device, but for the end user, it doesn't have as much impact. 16 was the first fin, 20 was the last planar device, right? I think if you go back a year or two even, everybody thought 20 would not be a big node because 28 was a good device and 16 was the first fin, so why buy the last planar device? 20 was a small node because 16 was an attractive device to get to the FinFET, because in terms of power consumption speed, a FinFET's a better device, right? There wasn't a lot of pull at 20. When everybody, the customers went to 16 and 14, there wasn't a lot of people sitting on 20, so they could move a lot of the tools to 16. When you go to 10 and 7, there are a lot of customers who are going to end up, customers' customers, taping out 16, 14 because it's going to be an attractive node because you've got the transistor. There's not as much equipment to be used from 16, 14 to 10 because 16's going to have a lot more tape outs than 20, right? You won't have as much availability to move to 10. I think, one, you won't have as much to move because 16's going to be a lot bigger than 20 was in terms of tape outs. Secondly, 10 in and of itself is probably more attractive than 20 because you got to the FinFET, which is more powerful than the last generation of planar. I think you'll have some reuse, but you won't have the type of phenomenon you had in the 28 to 20 and 16 node because there wasn't a lot of people at 20. There's a lot of reuse availability, and there's probably a little bit more latent capacity than we saw. The question will be timing of 10, but I don't think you'll have the same phenomenon on the reuse.
Thanks for sharing that on the foundry business, Bob.
Sure.
Just, I've got one company-specific question, and we got a bunch that we could take from the crowd. Just on the company-specific trends, it sounded on the gross margin line, you sound a little bit more confident we can get the gross margin from, I guess, roughly 42% back into the, let's say, the mid-40s, maybe eventually higher. How much of that is in your control as opposed to maybe more customer mix related or product mix related? It sounds like you've been making some pretty good gains in the supply chain as well. Maybe it's a little combination of the two.
Sure. If you look at Applied's gross margins in 2012, they were 40.9%. We got up to 2013, 42.1%. 2014, 44.1%. 2015, we're 42.9% or something like that, 43%. Right around there. I forget the number exactly. We went down about a point or so, a little over a point. The single biggest driver for us in the decline was the mix within semi, between memory and foundry, where our mix of tools is better in foundry than memory. As I said earlier, there was about a 9-point swap between DRAM and foundry and WFE spend in 2015. We think that normalizes and helps us because that was a big driver. The other somewhat lesser drivers for us were display was down a little bit for us because of, again, a mix issue between selling equipment for manufacture of big TVs versus selling equipment for sale of displays for your iPhone and your iPad. The mix of our tools and margins on equipment sold for TVs is higher than the mix of our margins on displays for smaller screen sizes. The gross margins are going up over time in the smaller screen sizes and in memory for us in semi, but right now, the mix is a little bit against us. We think both of those mix things get better next year. The foundry will get better, we think, in the second half of next year. Q1 and Q2 are our fiscal 2016. We've been conservative on that semi mix. We think a display will get better probably in the third quarter. The good news is we're gaining share in both memory and small TV sizes. Our total revenues are up, our share's up, but the mix of the gross margin product's a little bit off. The other thing that contributed to the gross margins is we have a fair amount of new products. As I talked earlier, etch, ALD, CVD, CMP also, display, we have new products. It seems counterintuitive, but typically, when you introduce a brand-new product in our industry, the gross margins aren't quite as high because you haven't really started cost reducing it. You typically can cost reduce new products pretty aggressively for two to three years. We're entering that phase of cost reducing new products because we had a higher weighting of new products in our revenues than we had in the past. That's driving the revenues and market share, but the mix on gross margin is a little bit off. Third, we're making good progress on overall material cost reduction. We said on the call that the second half of next year, we think our gross margins will be up 2 points roughly from the first half of next year because we think the foundry versus memory mix a little better, display mix a little better, the new products are maturing a little bit more, and we'll get material cost across the whole portfolio a little bit more. We think some of these mix things and cost reduction stuff and product positioning start to get better for us next year, including the second half.
Okay. Thanks for sharing that on gross margin. We have about 12 minutes left.
Okay.
If you're okay, I'll
Keep firing away.
Read a couple of random questions.
Sure.
From our audience members. Got this question a few times. You're seeing in the semi-cap industry some consolidation. You're seeing Lam and KLA combine forces. What's your view on how this consolidation changes the industry?
We've been asked this question for years. If you go look at it, because the concentration of customers should supply as a concentrate, the industrial logic is okay, right? The thing is, well, how do you move the needle on the financials if you do that? You look at it, best product wins, I said that at the beginning, and 60% of our space, we have strong positions, and the other 40% we're gaining. Within our products, we're in really good shape, right? You say, how do you move your P&L? The other things you look at is tax structures and G&A savings and arguably revenue synergies, right? If you look at the model we put forward with our merger with Tokyo Electron, we had a lot of tax benefits, reasonable amount of G&A, and some reasonable amount of revenue synergies. I think that the industrial logic's okay, but then you got to say, well, how do we move the needle in terms of the financials and leverage to the financials for the investors? That's the specific deal. In terms of Applied Materials, Gary said on the call a number of times is we have three hurdle rates to do something. One, does this strategically make sense for Applied Materials? Two, can we move the needle economically, financially? And three, does it fit within sort of our longer-term vision, which is sort of a strategic issue also. So we have the same, we've been in the industry a long time. We have the same criteria no matter what. So we're not going to be dissuaded from a deal if we think it's a really good deal, but we're also not going to be pushed into a deal where you think it's not a good deal. So I think the general logic consolidation is okay, but the devil's in the details.
Okay. Nice. Thanks for sharing that on consolidation.
Sure.
So we got a question on the one of the products of Applied, the atomic layer deposition tool. So if you look at DRAM customers, the amount of spend on these atomic layer deposition tools sounds like it's increasing as you go from, let's call it the 18-nanometer node to some of the more advanced 10-nanometer logic nodes. Maybe you can share with us how you see that opportunity in atomic layer deposition. I know you introduced a product recently, and do you think it's a tool that has enough capabilities to compete with the other existing atomic layer deposition tools out there?
Yeah, we think it's a pretty good tool. We have a reasonable amount of data on it. We've had this tool a little bit more weighted towards leading-edge logic and foundry customers, some memory too, I guess, but more logic and foundry for probably over, I don't know, a year and a half. So we already have D2R wins and I think P2R wins. So we see the revenue going up this year and next, and we can sort of name the accounts and the applications. So we have line of sight to it. The tool's getting really good results in terms of device performance. So if you look at our industry, you sell equipment and you can provide one of three benefits to the customer. Either you can help them get a better device, we call it device performance. So they can make a better computer chip, they can sell more of them. They'll either gain share or get higher pricing. So they most like equipment that gives them better device performance. The second thing you do is help them yield out of the factory, higher yield, a bigger percentage of the devices work. And the third is cost of ownership throughput. We're seeing benefits in device performance and yield with the ALD tool. So that's the most powerful pitch you can sell a product on. So we expect a fair amount of pull for the tool. And productivity-wise, it's pretty good too because it's pretty unique design in terms of rotational different pies shapes on the tool.
Okay.
I think it'll do well.
Great. Thanks for sharing that on ALD. Another question for our audience is back on the foundry 10-nanometer node. If you listen to some of the foundries talk about the 10-nanometer node, you could come to the conclusion that it might be a short-duration technology node in terms of how many years it'll ramp. Do you have any initial thoughts on the duration of this node? It sounds like you believe it'll be a node that customers have to invest in.
Yeah.
Does it seem like it could be a normal node, a shorter node?
I think these nodes are sort of three-quarter nodes right now. I mean, in other words, they're part of a two-nodal transition. As I said, the first one's sort of the interconnect, the second one's a transistor. So they kind of want to get through both so they get the transistor oomph too. Now, so for the end user, my guess, 16 was more attractive to the end user than 20, and 7 might be more attractive than 10 because you get the benefits of the density with 10, but you also get the transistor oomph on 7, right? So I think the customers have even said 10's a good node, but 7's even more attractive down the road. That kind of makes sense to me, frankly. Now, the thing that's counterintuitive is that the spending at 20 and probably at 10 for the volume of wafer starts they have is pretty good because they buy a lot of the equipment for the interconnect to put that in place and to get set up for the next one, 7 or in the previous case, 16. So the spending by the customers can be strong at 10 to do all the interconnect layers and also start the transition to 7, even though the tapeouts might be bigger at 7.
Okay. All right. Thanks for sharing that on foundry. Another question from audience members. Moore's Law, you could argue it's slowing. Intel talks about Moore's Law slowing. The question to you is, what can these semi-cap equipment companies like Applied do to address that, to stay relevant? Or do you disagree with that view that maybe some of the products you're currently selling today into multiple patterning will become more intense or require more more investment, and that's still a healthy driver for equipment companies, even with this slight slowing of Moore's Law.
Yeah, but no offense, the speeding up, slowing down Moore's Law is kind of very, it's a high-level message, right? It's sort of like when we do strategic planning at the company. Somebody can say something strategically, but you can't figure out till you segment the strategy, right? So you got to segment the industry and say, is it slowing or not slowing? So I'll start with NAND. I don't see it slowing. The pace of innovation going from 2D to 3D NAND and then going to second generation of 3D NAND, the technical complexities and the unlocking of the ability to scale down the road, pretty damn powerful, right? Probably more powerful than Moore's Law and 2D scaling, right? And if you go to, as you alluded to, DRAM is still scaling pretty effectively, and the technology and cost challenges to do that, particularly on patterning around the periphery, I don't see it slowing, right? So then if you go to foundry, where they're aggressively doing these two nodal transitions on 2016, 10, 7, they're probably moving faster than ever, frankly. Now, the leading-edge technology leader in leading-edge logic, there's a perception they have slowed. Is that a tactical issue or a choice or cost or yield? I don't know. But all the other players, I don't see slowing. And even things you guys don't look at so closely, sensor devices, analog devices, those things are starting to ramp aggressively too. So across the board, I don't see a big slowing of technology or spending.
Okay. I think we have time for maybe one last question. Someone was hoping to get your updated view on the strategy for products and process control.
Oh, sure.
And you've done quite well in other products in deposition and etch.
Yeah.
If you could give a quick recap on process control.
Yeah, that's a good question. If you look at overall spending on inspection, it's kind of been flat the last few years. Now, part of the argument for that is that it's been more weighted towards spending on memory versus foundry, which we talked about. Then part of the argument is these devices need to be reviewed or inspected differently, and people change their strategy a little bit for inspection. So what you've seen, there's actually a company in Taiwan that's grown rapidly in the last few years on e-beam inspection. We're not optically inspecting. You look at voltage variation and things like that. That's kind of an interesting technology because you've got multiple layers, right? How do you optically inspect multiple layers you can't have line of sight to? Now, what they're also, the other argument is customers are doing more and more work before they go into mass production on design, inspection, so that they don't have yield issues in manufacturing. I think all of the above are true. So how's it play for Applied Materials? We have, as Gary said many times, and Gary, many of you know, was the president of KLA for a number of years, we have probably the best e-beam technology, but we haven't commercialized it that well in an inspection tool. So we expect to do that more aggressively. In fact, we had revenue, I think, in memory and foundry last quarter in this e-beam inspection tool, and we expect those revenues to ramp this year. And then we will also have a next-generation optical inspection tool in 2016. So we think our products, which drive revenues, will be better positioned in 2017 than they were in sort of 2016, 2015. And it should go to these transitions in how people do inspection.
Okay. Well, great. That's about all the time we have, Bob. I want to thank you a lot for joining us for our keynote speak this morning. Thank you all for attending.
Thank you very much.
Bob.
Appreciate it.